Blog Talk Radio.
Well, we have a slightly tired Mr. Palmer today for a big show. We have 90 minutes. We have our NBA preview, probably around 7:30, 7:40. We have pro football. We have World Series. We have college football. Where do we start? We'll leave Syracuse for another day. I guess we start with, good morning, Mr. Palmer.
Well, we start with the fact that aside from Monday Night Football, there's nothing on tonight sports related, so I can get some sleep. And I'm a very, very happy camper for that. So after watching the debacle that is the New York Jets yesterday, I don't even have words to describe the debacle that was the New York Jets yesterday, and when Seth starts talking about it, I will probably go mute. And then watching the Royals thoroughly outpitched by Madison Bumgarner last night, I'm ready for some sleep and to wake up tomorrow to a brand new day.
Where the Jets
are not in last place at 1-7. Syracuse is not on its way to the NCAA for some punishment. Where the Mets are in the playoffs, where the Royals are not down 3-2. Yeah, that's called dreamland, and I'm ready to go there in about 90 minutes.
On the bright side, at least the Islanders are in the playoff hunt a week and a half in. But
we're
let's start
six and
actually.
Two, baby. 6-2,
yes,
and Keegan Reed was spot on.
There you go. Let's start, as you said, at East Rutherford, where we have a QB change, which probably could have happened a couple weeks earlier. But when you have a quarterback who completes 5 passes in the first half, in the first quarter, 3 of them to the opposite team, it does kind of instigate things. The Jets fall in an embarrassing, I can safely say an embarrassing performance. 43-23, 44-23. It was ugly. 6 turnovers, 3 by Geno Smith, 3 by his replacement, Michael Vick, who will be the starter going forward. And, you know, Sean has joked for years how at one point he wishes the Jets would just be bad enough to draft a standout quarterback, an Andrew Luck, an RG3, a John Elway, a Peyton Manning, whoever it is. And the ironic part is they may be bad enough, although I doubt it, to get that this season. But Sean is not sold on Mariota. He's not sold on Jameis Winston or Brett Hundley. So what do you have to look forward to right now as a Jets fan?
Well, I'm sold on Jameis Winston. I'm just on his physical abilities. I'm just not sold that he's not going to be the next Nick LaLouche, $1 million arm and a 10-cent head. So that's what it seems like so far. But I've been proved wrong before. So what do I have to look forward to as a Jets fan? Well, I said I was going to be mute when we started talking about the Jets, and I think that's my best way right now.
All right, then we'll skip over the Jets just because it's kind of hard to feel. Because even as a Giants fan, you got to feel bad for them because it's not like the Giants are very good either. So anyone wants to call, this is, of course, the Seth and Sean Show on backsportspage.com, Blog Talk Radio. If anyone wants to call in, as always, we appreciate it, 760-283-0846. So Tom Brady goes 30 for 35. I think it's 360 yards and 5 touchdowns. And 4 of his 5 incompletions are drops. And he may not have had the best quarterbacking day of the weekend. Everyone always forgets about Ben Roethlisberger. Sometimes because they want to forget about him because of his past. Because he's not, you know, he doesn't have the persona of a Brady, of a Manning, of a Breeze. He doesn't have that charisma. But man, did he put on a show last night against Indy. 522 yards, I believe the second most in NFL history behind Norm Van Brocklin or somewhere around that range. I think the last I saw was at 522. I don't remember if he broke that. I know he didn't break Van Brocklin, 551. Touchdowns as Pittsburgh beats a solid Indy team 54-44, 53-43, something along those lines. I'm sure I can look it up pretty quickly. You know, I'm one who, and I think I've been pretty good about it over the years, where I've always had 51-34 was the final, where I've always had Roethlisberger as the number five. That has been my consistent number five quarterback. We talk about all these greats. Roethlisberger has two Super Bowl wins. He lost the third one. Does he not get enough recognition because he plays in Pittsburgh? Does he not get enough recognition because of the rape allegations and everything that's gone along with him over the years? Or does he get enough recognition as a potentially a borderline Hall of Fame quarterback?
Well, I don't think he's a borderline Hall of Fame quarterback. I think he is a Hall of Fame quarterback. So he threw for the fourth most yards yesterday in a game behind Norm Van Brocklin, Warren Moon, and Matt Schaub. Two Hall of Famers and a guy that couldn't play for
the
Raiders.
And Matt Schaub.
Right. So, and we can go into the Raiders later who lost to the Browns yesterday. So, they're the only competition for the first pick in the draft right now with the Jets. But I think Roethlisberger's had a better career than Eli Manning.
I agree.
I just don't think he has the name.
I think that's something that, I mean, well, that's what I think. When I said Manning, I meant Peyton, not Eli.
No, I understand that. But out of that draft, so right now in that draft, you have the three quarterbacks, right? You have the three that will forever be intertwined. Philip Rivers, Ben Roethlisberger, and Eli Manning. I think if you have to put them on a career path right now, or a career, not trajectory, but achievement level. Yeah, Roethlisberger's one. Manning and Rivers are very close at two and three, although Manning has two Super Bowls, so that puts him above Rivers.
I'm not sure although I think Rivers at times has been a better quarterback, I'm not sure you could put him above Manning because of the two Super Bowls.
Agreed. Completely agreed. But I think Roethlisberger is head and shoulders above the other two. Maybe it's the system. Maybe it's the fact that he plays in Pittsburgh that he gets a little underappreciated. I mean, he's had a better career than Terry Bradshaw, who is revered in Pittsburgh. So he's the best quarterback in Pittsburgh history. And he's a Hall of Famer. And does he get underappreciated? No, I think he gets underrecognized in the fact that he just goes out and does his business. He's one of those guys that he's just good. He's consistently good. He doesn't really have those horrible games. So he's consistently good. And the one thing you can take from him, and I'd say you probably could take it for the other two quarterbacks, which is surprising in the NFL, is all three of those have been incredibly durable. None of them have really missed time. None of the three of them are incredibly nimble in the fact that they're not running quarterbacks. So they stand in the pocket and they take hits, all three of them.
Well, when I look at that AFC North, it's pretty fascinating where you have the best record is at 4-2-1, and the worst record is at 4-3. When you're looking at this division, even if you look at the AFC West, you have three teams also over 500. Pittsburgh has been under the radar a bit. Their passing game has been phenomenal. But they were a team that you thought was old on the defensive side, and I still think they are. Cincinnati wins a disputed victory over my Baltimore Ravens when Steve Smith gets called for an offensive pass interference with 40 seconds to go on an EDR bomb. Is there any way to really differentiate the teams in the AFC North right now?
Well, I think you differentiate them by their quarterbacks. So, the best quarterback in that division is Ben Roethlisberger, to me.
Yes.
The second best is your favorite guy is Joe Flacco.
Agreed.
Only because he's won in the postseason. Then you got Dalton, and then you got Brian Hoyer. And this is exactly what the NFL wants. Because a couple of years ago, the NFL made a decision that all the games down the stretch, I think all the games in the last month, would be within the division. So you're going to come down to the last month of the season in December, and all these teams are going to be relatively close, and every game is going to count. Now, that's good for some divisions, and that's awful for others. So, I mean, you look at the AFC East, who cares? I mean, there's no way anybody's going to pick up the Patriots. It's just not going to happen. But if you look at the AFC North, that's a great division for this concept, right? I mean, if you look at the AFC, what is it, South, But division by division, it's going to be pretty nice. It's going to be nice to see San Diego and Denver again at the end of the year. That was a good game. They'll be in San Diego, so it'll probably be a better game for San Diego. But good games. So I was very getting back to what you were saying, Roethlisberger flies under the radar. Yeah, he does. But you're right. It's because he plays in Pittsburgh. He's not in the media cap of the world. And he really doesn't say very much, which is quintessential Pitsburgh. He's a lunch pail guy. The interesting thing is he needs a new contract. He's in a contract here. So it was very interesting to see him put up the numbers that he's putting up because he has, I believe, an $18 million figure this year under the cap. And he's going to want an Eli Manning-type deal, which is like 20 to 22 for the next 5 to 6 years. And if you're Pittsburgh, how do you not give him that?
Well, it's kind of funny that 2 years ago, this was a guy who was under consideration for being traded, potentially for the number one pick in the draft. And, you know, he may not be beloved. That's not a word I would use to describe Ben Roethlisberger. But he has been extraordinarily solid since his rookie year. When he came in halfway through the season, and remember, he led his rookie season to a 14-2 record. So we're halfway through the season. And what have been your biggest surprises and your biggest disappointments so far?
Well, the Jets sucking. The Giants sucking.
You thought the Giants were going to be pretty mediocre.
Yeah, but I didn't think they would be as bad as they were against the Eagles. I mean, they were thoroughly
awful
in every aspect of the game. Justin Pugh, who I love, he's a Syracuse guy. He's actually a really nice guy. Was a human turnstile in that game. It felt like they were all human turnstiles. Okay, so what else am I surprised by? I'm surprised by the Chargers and how good they have been. I've been surprised at how really bad the Raiders have been. I mean, they're just awful. I'm surprised by the Chiefs and that they still can't have a passing game because they have nobody to throw to. They still have to solve. Andy Reid has certainly not solved that problem. And, of course, the number one surprise of the NFL to me has been how good the Dallas Cowboys have played. Because while I believe I did pick them to go 9-7 or 10-6, I didn't believe that they would have the best record in the NFL by any stretch of the imagination.
I don't think you picked them anywhere near that. I think picked both. I think we're going to have to look back next week. But I think you had both Dallas and the Giants at around 6-10. And you thought Dallas would be better than the Giants because the Giants had nothing, but Dallas at least had an offense.
No. I definitely had the Redskins not as second. I thought I had Dallas second. I thought I had the Eagles winning the division at 11-5. I thought I had Dallas at 10-6 or 9-7. I thought I had both the Redskins and the Giants at 6-10. I may be wrong, but that's what I thought.
Either
way, they have been incredibly surprising.
Yes.
And their offensive line has been the most surprising part of any team in the NFL to me this year.
Oh, I disagree. I just completely disagree. The biggest shock for me this season has been seeing Dallas' defense, which was the worst in the NFL last year and lost their three best players, and it become almost a top-tier defense this year. That, to me, is more shocking than their offensive line, although their offensive line – Dallas has been just been a shock as a whole. You know, they were a team that you always knew had offensive talent but could never get it together. And, again, we're halfway through the season. I mean, I think the biggest disappointment to me is how in the heck does the NFC South not have a team at 500 at this point? The best record we have is 3-4-1 with Carolina. Atlanta, which I believe you took to win the division, I think I had as a wild card. Or maybe I had Tampa, I forget which, have a combined 3 wins. New Orleans, although they looked good in beating Green Bay, I still have no confidence can win a game out on the road. And they just, it just seems like a division that you thought was going to be very strong, and they've been terrible.
Yep.
Big surprise, Arizona, who loses a lot of, it was supposed to be a defense, you know, a solid defensive team. They lose Carson Palmer for a couple weeks. Their passing defense, which was their strength, has not been great. And they're 6-1. And not only that, they're 6-1 with a point differential of 25, which seems unreasonable to me. That would mean they'd be winning the games by an average of 3-4 points. And credit to Bruce Arians, who may be the 2-time Coach of the Year.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say that. He's my Coach of the Year candidate this year, so far. I think it's him. I think you obviously give some credit to Bill Belichick, because Bill Belichick, I don't know. I mean, he reminds me of Michael Jordan in some ways, in the fact that you could give it to him every single year if you wanted to, and you never have an issue. Because, as you have pointed out numerous times, they don't really have that much talent. And yet, he still decides, he still makes it work. And credit to Tom Brady, who may get right now is on track maybe for most valuable player. Him and Peyton Manning, again, is 1-2. And DeMarco Murray is a solid third. But you're right. I mean, and coordinator of the year right now, you're spot on. It's Rod Marinelli for the defense that he's putting together in Dallas. As far as the most disappointing team besides my New York Jets, Seattle Seahawks. They were supposed to go 6-0, 15-1, 14-2. Well, they already have 3 losses, and they lost to the Rams.
They did lose to the Rams, and while they've been disappointing, yeah, no, they have been disappointing. There's no question about that. But, you know, there's a lot. To me, the coach of the year, one of the coaches of the year, and this is a guy who I thought was an awful pickup by the Detroit Lions, in Jim Caldwell. Now, this is a team that has had no discipline over the years. They brought in a coach who I would almost say was a retread. They lose Calvin Johnson for most of the year. Matthew Stafford has not been great. But their defense, which has been so maligned over the years, has been phenomenal. Golden Tate has played like a number one wideout. And they're a solid 6-2, leading in a pretty tough NFC North. Although one of the other big disappointments, which I would put right with the Jets, has been the Chicago Bears, who have not won a home game this season. And, you know, this vaunted offense with Jeffrey and Bennett and Brandon Marshall and Matt Forte and Jay Cutler, it just hasn't performed. And now you're starting to hear the whispers, is Jay Cutler the next Jeff George? Because if you're not going to win with this offensive talent, and their defense is not very good, but if you're not going to win with this offensive talent, I don't know where you go from here if you're Mark Trestman.
Oh, and Jay Cutler may actually bring down Mark Trestman, right? I mean, Trestman did a good job last year, but the whole point was that Trestman was supposed to rein in Cutler and give Cutler, they've given Cutler the weapons to do it. but that's a great comparison, him to Jeff George. Now, he's not as outspoken as Jeff George. He doesn't throw tantrums like Jeff George. But Jeff George had all the physical capabilities that you would want in a quarterback. He just never won. He wasn't a team player. And so far, you can see the same thing of Mr. Cutler.
And, yeah, it's a situation where, you know, Trestman's only been there for 2 years. But if this team continues to drop down, you know, Lovie Smith was brought down by Cutler. If Trestman is as well, this is, you know, this may be, you know, I wouldn't put him as certainly as the coach in the hottest place right now. I think Sexy Rexy has that reserved. But it is not a good situation in Chicago. The difference is there is time to turn that one around. I don't think there's time to save Rex in East Rutherford at this point. Agreed? Disagree?
Well, I don't know. I mean, like I said, I wanted to be mute on the Jets. I think the first guy that has to go is not Rex, but Gene Itzik, who has done a horrendous job with that team. In every facet, he has done a horrendous job. He hasn't gotten Rex the... Look, you can say whatever you want. John Itzik brought in Geno Smith. When the Jets needed a cornerback, he didn't spend the money on Darrell Revis, who wanted to come back to New York. He went out and got Dimitri Patterson, who went AWOL and was cut. The guy that stopped Sammy Watkins on that run this week was a wide receiver playing cornerback, and his name is not Troy Brown.
Good reference.
You find that. Thank you. He gets in Percy Harvin when he's 1-6 and then says, okay, let's play him forever. He backs up Geno Smith with Michael Vick, which is okay, but...
I was going to say, I didn't have a problem with that.
They couldn't complete a pass yesterday. This guy hasn't given... I'm sorry. He hasn't given Rex... He reminds me of the Mets and Sandy Alderson. Except baseball and football don't work the same way as going up the minors, in that you live in New York. You have a team in New York. You have the resources that New York brings. And you don't use them. And you don't give the management the players that they need to win. The Jets do not have the players that they need to win. It's just that simple. You've said this before. They have the worst skill positions in football. They do. Even with Percy Harvin, they do. It's not even close. The Raiders have more skill than they do. And that's sad.
Yes, it is.
So, yeah. John Itzik goes first. If Rex follows him out the door, I have no problem with it. But if Rex is leaving and Itzik stays, I'd probably go mute all next year. And Marcus Mariota will probably be our quarterback. And once again, we're going to get a guy with that on. That's simple.
Going for, because we're in such a good mood, I think we'll leave the NFL for the rest of the week. We'll go to baseball, where it's been an interesting World Series, overshadowed, of course, yesterday by the tragic death of Oscar Tavares from the Cardinals. Tavares, one of the real, supposed to be a rookie star this year, didn't quite hit that level, but had a world of potential and just a real devastating death in a car crash in the Dominican Republic. I believe he was 22, and you know the whole baseball world is still in mourning over this right now.
Yeah, well, Tavares was the number 3 prospect in Baseball America in MLB rankings this year. You know, what's beyond sad is that if the Cardinals had won the NLCS instead of the Giants, he wouldn't have been in the situation where he was in, because he would have been playing in a game last night. Look, I don't know anything about the circumstances other than he was in a car crash with his girlfriend. It's an extremely sad situation. A wonderful talent that had been compared to a young Ted Williams. Now, that's really strong praise. A young Albert Pujols, the Cardinals traded away Alan Craig in order to make room for this guy. He showed a little bit of immaturity the last 2 years, some injuries. But all in all, he was on his way to stardom. And nobody inside of baseball believed otherwise. So, he's – I was reading this morning, and my jaw just dropped. It's an absolute tragedy when you lose somebody 22 years old. I don't care who he is.
Agreed. And, I mean, the World Series has been – it's been interesting, but I'm not going to say – The most riveting part about it, I believe, has been actually just that the Kansas City Royals have made it, as opposed to the actual games. None of these games have been earth-shattering. There hasn't been, I don't think there's been a one-run game. Maybe there was, and I'm forgetting off the top of my head. It doesn't seem to have the same. What'd you say?
No, you're correct. No one-run games.
Yeah, it just hasn't seemed to have had the same pizzazz, which is kind of sad. I mean, maybe it's just me, and maybe because I am an Eastern guy and it's a team in the West and a team in the Midwest. But I think most of the country has been really pretty, really enjoying the Kansas City run. The ratings, I think, have been okay, nothing spectacular. But, you know, how have you felt about it 5 games in with the Niners? With San Francisco up 3-2. And this, actually, before we even get to that, strange things, we discussed this yesterday, was if the Giants win, is it me or is this just about the most obscure dynasty I've ever seen in sports? 3 championships in 5 years when realistically, none of these teams are really the best team in the 3 champions are going to win games with 3 championships. And they haven't been the best team in baseball in any of those years. Maybe one of them, but I don't believe so. I mean, what's your feeling on it?
Well, I think the regular season is incredibly diluted by all these playoff games, by all these series, by the fact that you have a 1-game playoff, then you have a 5-game playoff, then you have a 7-game playoff. It dilutes the amount of work that you do during the regular season. So let's go back in history, and I understand I'm going back before 1972. So before the divisions, actually before 1969, the division. And you played your year for the one spot in the World Series. There was no championship series. There was no play. There was no wild card. It was you played the entire year for that one position, and you could say you were the best because you were the best in your league to get into that position, and then you beat the other side's best. You're done. When the Yankees won, what was it, 8 out of 11, maybe 9 out of 11? I don't know the actual number. They were the best all 9 years. And there's no disputing it. They didn't get a pitcher that was on a run that just won it. They were the best. When you get to the after 69, you have the East versus the West. Okay, you still could say that now there's 2 spots, right? So you're still playing for 2 spots, and then you go to the World Series. And those 2 spots had, I believe it was a 7-game series for the 2, and then you went 7 games for the World Series. Could still say that the regular season meant a lot. But now you have 4. So 4 out of 16 teams in one league. Now there's 15 each.
I was going to say 5 now, actually, because you have that wild card and the second wild card.
The wild card, the second wild card, and 5. So 5 out of 15, so 1/3 of all teams in the divisions make the playoffs. It's like hockey. It dilutes the regular season. It makes the regular season, to me, inconsequential. Does it make the last month of the season more exciting? Absolutely. Bud Selig was spot on. But I think it makes the playoffs and the World Series not as exciting for that reason.
Pretty
I'm off my soapbox.
I was going to say, pretty strong words, Mr. Palmer. It's funny, we've talked about dilution in almost every sport, except actually probably for the sport we're going to talk about most, we'll talk about in a minute or two. Now, baseball has felt that way. Football has felt that way. I think football is, I guess, the exception. I think people enjoy the regular season of football more in a lot of ways more than they enjoy the playoffs. But, it does feel just a bit off, for lack of a better term. And, but the regular season, that's I think, the best right now, or I shouldn't say the best, because I think the NFL is the sport that seems to have come back the most is probably the best way to say it. And, it's time for our preview of the NBA this year. And this is a sport 7, 8, 9 years ago that there was an issue with the regular season. And it was boring. The teams weren't the style of play was not very exciting. The people that were promoting it were not people you wanted per se promoting it to the specific audience that you were trying to hit. And now it has exploded yet again. And you have talent galore. The international expansion has been phenomenal. Even when you have the huge issues you have with Sterling and the Atlanta owner, it seems like for every negative, Adam Silver, took control during the Sterling situation. LeBron obviously redeems himself, for lack of a better term, returns to Cleveland. And you look at the Western Conference, and there is just an enormous amount of talent. And you may very well have a 47, 48 win team that doesn't make the playoffs, or a team that would be a top three in the East, top four in the East that doesn't qualify. It could be in the lottery. And then you have teams like Philadelphia and Boston, which you may have NCAA college teams, which are better at this point. So it should be a good year of pro basketball. And, at some point we will have a bunch of people on to talk about it. Usually Jared Rowling from Bleacher Report joins us. We were trying to get Ian Eagle on, which would be a lot of fun, so Sean and him could relive their Syracuse days together.
Did not go to Syracuse at the same time.
Yeah, Eagle's about a year or two younger than Sean is, but we don't talk about that. But what are you looking forward to this year in the NBA?
Well, I'm looking forward to the Clippers being a top three team in the West. I'm looking forward to seeing Tim Duncan probably in his last year and appreciating Tim Duncan, because there hasn't been anybody I can remember like Tim Duncan ever. I've been watching the NBA my whole life. I keep trying to think of somebody that has been so quiet and yet so productive like him and so consistent. And I can't come up with somebody. And I ask you to come up if you can think of anybody like that, that's been so good for so long and has just been absolutely consistent his whole way. I think the only person that comes to mind is John Stockton, and different positions. But I certainly did not appreciate what Stockton brought to the table in his – I appreciated his prime, but once he was in his last couple of years, I didn't appreciate probably not seeing a guy like him again. And we may never see a guy like Duncan again. I mean, the closest guy that I think that comes to him right now that's coming into the league is Anthony Davis. And that's number two. I'm really looking forward to seeing how good he can become. He may be a top three player in the league by the end of the year.
Well, the problem is you're not going to actually get to see Anthony Davis because apparently they're only on TV twice this year, once with ESPN and once with TNT. So unless you got the NBA, you're going to be watching the NBA League Pass. Not going to be too much to tell, too much to see. And yeah, there's a lot out there. You know, let's get started with one of the divisions that is not going to be quite as strong, to say the least, the Atlantic. You know, when you look at those five teams, you have Boston, Brooklyn, New York, Philly, and Toronto. And I'm almost wondering if you could combine Philly and Boston to one team for this year. Philadelphia or Boston or Philadelphia. Because if you combine those two teams, I'm not sure you have a playoff team. I mean, Philly to me is a D-League team for this year. And you look at the talent that they're surrounding them, that they're putting in there. There may be something down the line, 2 years, 3 years down the line. I mean, but it's at a point where the NBA debated changing the lottery system based on Philly, for all intents and purposes, throwing the last 2 years. Do you have a fundamental issue with what they're doing?
Nope. It's within the league rules. I have no problem with it. They wouldn't be the first team to tank games. They won't be the last team to tank games. Look, the NHL didn't have a lottery for a long time, and people tanked games. I mean, how do you think that the Penguins got Mario Lemieux? They tanked games. At least there is a lottery. Look, you can tank games in the NBA, and you saw what they did last year. They tanked games, and they still didn't get the number one pick. So I don't have a problem with what they're doing. I would have a problem with if I was a season ticket holder off the Sixers, but I'm not. So, no, I don't have a problem with it. Look, I wish the Jets would tank the rest of the season and get the first pick overall.
So, but I thought you didn't because there's nobody you want them to take anyway.
Well, there's not, but at least I can get a first pick in the second round, too. I mean, they can't blow every first pick. Oh, that's not saying much. But anyway, so, yeah, I mean, Philadelphia is definitely the worst team on paper in the league. But you do get some people. You get to see Nerlens Noel, the number one pick last year. And not the number one pick, the number three pick number six pick last year.
Number six.
You get to see Michael Carter Williams again, who the rookie of the year from last year. He'll be back, I believe it's November 13th. I think he's missing the first three games, first six games of the year. But overall, you're right. They are a D-League team. The big question out of Boston is, do they keep or do they trade Rondo? And he'll be a deadline trade in all likelihood. They don't have much there. In fact, they're leaning towards starting Evan Turner, which tells you so much on so many different levels.
Well, at least in Philly, you see the potential there. You see that they brought in Joel Embiid. They have Nerlens Noel. They have Michael Carter Williams, the defending rookie of the year. Tony Roten is a heck of a scorer, bit of a chucker, but an interesting player to have around. I don't know what they have in Boston. You know, who are you building this Boston team around? You know, you're going to trade Rondo, my assumption would be. You know, whether it's to Sacramento, whether it's to New York, wherever it goes. But Sacramento doesn't have a heck of a lot to offer because they're not going to trade DeMarcus Cousins. The Knicks have, I guess, what, Shumpert and a draft pick? I'm guessing. There's something along those lines. But you look at the talent Boston has. There is not much there. I really like Marcus Smart. I like him. I loved him in college. You know, he will fit in well in Boston. It's that kind of personality. But Avery Bradley, you know, $8 million a year. Jeff Green, another $10 million a year, though he may be traded. You know, Jared Sullinger, Kelly Olynyk, these are not players that are going to really motivate you to sit home and watch a game. And I'm wondering if Brad Stevens is thinking, Tom Cream is out in Indiana after another bad year next year. Maybe it's time for me to go back.
No, I think he's there for the long term. I think he knew what he was getting into. I don't think Rondo goes to any of those places that you just mentioned. I think he winds up in Houston. And if he winds up in Houston with those guys, they got a bunch of first-round picks to trade. And right now, remember, Boston has the Jersey first-round pick for the next
Two of the next 3 years. I don't think it's this year. I think it's next year. I think New Jersey has their pick this year. Brooklyn has their pick this year. But
okay, I will.
I could be wrong.
I will look. I'll look that up. But in any event, they have abundance of picks. So, and if they trade Rondo and they trade him to Houston, they may get some more. So they're scrapping it and going up. Do they have top quality talent right now? No. But they will have an abundance of money under the cap next year. Not to say that that automatically gets you anything. They do have a couple of pieces. Do they have championship talent? No, but remember, they won a championship 5 years ago. They have some goodwill up there. Has it really been 5 years already?
More than that. I think it was 2008 that they won the title. When Garnett came over from Minnesota, which was the Jeff Green year. 2008.
Yep.
So in my mind, you have Brooklyn and New York fighting. Brooklyn, New York, and Toronto. I have Toronto winning the division. I have Brooklyn and New York fighting along with a couple other teams for the lower tier playoff spots. I have no idea what to make out of New York. I'll be perfectly honest with you. Carmelo resigns for the max. Extraordinarily exciting, as you can hear in my voice. They still have J.R. Smith. I do like them bringing in Jose Calderon. I don't know what to make out of this Knicks team at all. You know, playing under a first-year coach in an offense that none of them have ever played in. I think I have them missing the playoffs. I think they're right at that 38-39 win. You know, maybe a game or two above, a game or two below. They strike me as about a 500 team this year.
Okay. Well, I don't necessarily have any problem with what you just said. I love the Calderon pickup. That has some pretense to next year's free agency, where one of his favorite friends is actually a free agent. His name is Marc Gasol. And that would be a great pick for the Knicks to pick up for the triangle offense. Calderon's a great distributor. He's a good player. He's not much on the defensive end. And their defense is going to be horrendous this year. I mean, Dallas Cowboy 2013 bad, or 14 bad. I mean, they're going to be bad. But can they score? Yeah, they'll score. I'd love to see them make the playoffs. I'm just not sure it's going to happen. I think the Nets get that spot. You're right with Toronto winning the division. I'm with you as well. Jonas, and I can never pronounce that guy's last name. I really like him in the middle. It was him or Andre Drummond. So, you know what? Both teams made out, right? I mean, they both drafted very well that year. We'll see what Terrence Ross has, if DeMar DeRozan continues his upward climb or whether that was a one-year thing. And Kyle Lowry may be the most underrated point guard in the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, people are talking about, Deion Waiters saying how him and Kyrie – are the best backcourt in the league. And, you know, you hear, okay, Clay and Stephon out in Golden State, Bradley Beal and John Wall down in Washington. I think, you know, if DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry continue this. Now, Lowry's been a solid professional for years and is really, but this last year was the first year he started to get the acclaim that probably he deserved before. DeRozan kind of came out of nowhere. And as you said, if their upward trajectory continues, they could very well rest the mantle of the best guard play in the league.
Well, Rosen's a three, Seth, not necessarily a two.
I thought he was playing. I thought he was playing a little bit of more the two.
Terrence Ross is playing the two.
Okay,
so,
to me they kind of switch back. Okay, I take it back.
Yeah, I would. Yeah. Terrence Ross doesn't give you the DeMar DeRozan.
No, not quite the same upside. So, you know, we both have Toronto, Brooklyn, New York, Boston, Philly. Going to a little bit more of an interesting division, to say the least, you have the Central with Chicago, Cleveland, Detroit, Indiana, Milwaukee. Cleveland had a nice offseason. Do we need to really elaborate much more than that?
Just to pick up on where we left off, in 2015, Atlanta has the right to swap its 2015 first-round pick for Brooklyn's 2015 first-round pick.
Ah, the Joe Johnson trade.
The Joe Johnson trade. Brooklyn's you're right, the 2016 first round pick does go to Boston. So they have the right to swap. Atlanta has the right to swap. So they do get a pick. It's just not a very good one. I'm looking if there's anything more, but does not look that way. But anyway, they wait a second. Okay.
What am I waiting for?
I was still reading.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is the
Cleveland had a pretty good off season, getting LeBron and Kevin Love. But the key to that team is not necessarily those two players. I mean, they're going to get to the playoffs this year without a doubt. They'll probably get to the conference finals without a problem. I think they run into problems in the conference finals if you have a healthy Chicago team.
I do too, and we'll get to that a little bit later. The thing I probably should have mentioned, this really solid division, which could have even been better, except for the really tragic injury to Paul George in the World Cup basketball scrimmages, where he's out for the year, and Indiana fell from probably, I don't want to say a dark horse championship threat, but at least a solid playoff contender, a team that had made the Eastern Conference Finals the last 2 years, pretty much an also ran. You know, the questions of do they just reload? Do they just take a year off almost and wait for George to come back? Or do they try and trade a David West maybe to a Charlotte, as we've heard, or trade a Roy Hibbert and kind of just rebuild the team again? You could have legitimately argued that the three best teams in the Eastern Conference were in that division prior to George's injury. You have a Detroit team, which I think will surprise some players, especially with their new coach and GM and Stan Van Gundy. A real proven commodity, and I think a huge net gain. There. Milwaukee is still kind of in nowhere land. Their best player is their coach, and the Milwaukee is a couple years away, I think, from being relevant. Do you see Detroit or Indiana? Do you see Indiana making the playoffs?
No, I don't see Indiana making the playoffs. In fact, I think Indiana's got the biggest drop of any team. George Hill is hurt right now. Roy Hibbert, who knows what you're getting with Roy Hibbert right now? I mean, look, 2 years ago, he's the best center in basketball, right? And then in last year's playoffs, he had two games where he had offers. I mean, offers. How are you 7'2" and not score 2 points when you play over 25 minutes? How is that possible? Look, I think Indiana's looking to tear this thing down. I think they'll trade Hibbert if they can. I don't see anybody remember, Hibbert's on a max contract for two more years, $16 million a pop. The team that signed that max contract was Portland. So would they go and trade for him? Would you get like a Robin Lopez, Wesley Matthews for Roy Hibbert deal going? It has an interesting concept.
It does kind of have an interesting kick to it because, you know, when we get to the Western Conference, you know, Portland is in that team of that range of three or four teams that are a very nice team, but you can't really see them getting past the second round of the playoffs. And remember, Hibbert, you know, they have two legitimate number one players in Aldridge and Lillard. You know, maybe Hibbert can kind of someplace. Portland is also kind of well known for being a really forgiving basketball town. Maybe a good place for him to restart or reboot a little bit. So where do you see Detroit this year?
Well, last year I believe I predicted Detroit to go to the playoffs, and that didn't work.
Yeah.
I also had Chicago out of the playoffs, and that didn't work either. So I'm going to flip the switch, and I'm going to say Detroit's not going to go to the playoffs, and Chicago's going to go very far in the playoffs. They have to do something with Josh Smith, who may be the most untradeable player in basketball right now with that contract. Greg Monroe is on a one-year contract. So do they hold on to Smith? and get nothing from Monroe, because basically he signed his 1 year tender, and he's gone after this year, whether it be in a sign trade or just leaving. Or do they trade Smith and hope to re-sign Monroe? I don't know which way they're going. I know they like Monroe, but Monroe has no interest in playing with Josh Smith. So that'll be an interesting thing to watch. The backcourt with Pope and Brandon Knight, really not a point guard there. Finally, Rodney Stuckey has left.
Well, Brandon Jennings. Brandon Knight is in Milwaukee.
Brandon Jennings. Again, really no point guard there.
Not exactly.
I mean, doesn't really change the observation. It just changes the last name.
I was going to say, no, I have a little bit more faith. I really like Stan Van Gundy as a coach. This is a guy who coached mediocre talent in Orlando and averaged about 50 wins a season. It's going to be very interesting to see how his personality is going to mesh, as you said, with the Brandon Jennings and the Josh Smith. Supposedly, KCP has been Kentavious Pope has been very solid, and it's really improved his game. I don't know what they do, but you know, Joe Dumars is out after 30 years, I guess, with the Detroit organization between playing and being the GM. They needed a change. It may take a year or two, but I think they're in the right direction. At that point, you see what you do with Smith. Do you trade him? Do you keep him? Or do you let Monroe walk? Because you obviously can't keep both. We both like Chicago a lot. I don't think that's a huge surprise. You know, Chicago, well-coached, very tough. The biggest issue they had last year was the inability to score. So who do you bring back? Bring back Derrick Rose, the ex-MVP, if he can stay healthy. You bring in Dougie McBuckets from Creighton, Doug McDermott. Bring in, oh, yeah, Pau Gasol, 18-8 player still at this point. You bring over Nicholas Mirotic, who is one of the best players in Europe, scoring maven. Plus, you have the best center in basketball, Joakim Noah, Taj Gibson, Jimmy Butler. This is a really good team. They need if Rose can stay healthy, this is a championship caliber team right here.
If Rose can stay healthy, this team is in my championship. I mean, there's
mine as well.
They're in there. I think they have the best defensive team in basketball, and it's not even close. They have the best big man rotation in basketball, not even close. And even better, they can all shoot free throws, which for some reason has become something of a mystery for the NBA with big men. All four of their guys, Gibson, Noah, Mitrovic.
You're talking about Mirotić?
There you go. All shoot better than 75% from the free throw line. Now, that's not Mark Price, Steve Nash territory. But for a big man, when you got a guy like Drummond who shoots like 35, and you have Dwight Howard that shoots 45, 75 is pretty good. 3 out of 4 ain't bad. Meatloaf said something about that. It was 2 out of 3, but we're pretty much there. So I like that team a lot. And I like that team better than I like Cleveland because of their defense.
Going to the Southeast, you have the favorites, I think, and it's the first time you can say this in a long time. Southeast has you have 3 or 4 solid teams in the Southeast, probably led by the Bullets, by Los Wizardos down in Washington, a team that made a nice run. I forget if they made the conference finals or the conference semis. I think they made the conference finals. I think I was mistaken before. I think they beat Indiana in the conference. And, you know, led by John Wall and Bradley Beal, who's out for about a month and a half. They re-signed Marcin Gortat. They have Nene. It's a talented team. Otto Porter, I think, has to step up. They need to step up at the three, I believe. But, you know, they're talented. Charlotte's coming off the best year in their history, and they're just going to get better bringing in Lance Stephenson. It's a young, tough, talented team. If Kid Gilchrist can finally learn how to shoot, between him and Stephenson, you have some real two tough, tough players. Atlanta, you can just always kind of write in as the 7 seed. Or the 8 seed. You know, Al Horford is back. They still have Millsap. They have Jeff Teague. It's a good team. I don't think, you know, they can make the playoffs and can't go anywhere else. Are people sleeping too much on Miami, though? Obviously, you lose LeBron. You bring in Lou Alding, who's a nice player, a really solid complimentary player. You bring in Josh McRoberts. You draft Chavez Napier. I think people are sleeping on this Miami team. I see them as a four. I see them around the 5-6 seed in the East. And then you have Orlando, which is kind of still in the middle of trying to rebuild. Now, what are your feelings on the division as a whole?
Well, the division as a whole, you're right. It's a lot of 3-4-5 seed more than you have anybody at the top, and really other than Orlando, anybody at the bottom. Washington brought the band back together. They got Gortach. But the one guy that you're missing is the X factor. They signed Paul Pierce to play
three.
And
I
they don't need Otto Porter to play that position right now, which was vacated by Trevor Ariza. They have Paul Pierce. And while Bradley Beal is out for a month and a half, which I think, that's the best backcourt in the NBA right now. That's young backcourt to me. That and Golden State. So Kyrie Irving can say whatever he wants. That's not going to happen. And Toronto, now that DeMar DeRozan has decided to play the three, which everybody but Seth seemed to know. Sorry. That was kind of rude. Anyway. The fact is, they are a good team. They're a very good team. You're right. Are people sleeping on Miami? Absolutely. Look, you lose LeBron James, that's a huge pill. But it's not like they didn't get an all-star back, right? I mean, Luol Deng's a solid player. He's an 18-8 player, 18-7 player, and plays extremely good defense. The difference with Luol Deng as opposed to LeBron James, and there is a sizable difference, is the size, right? I mean, LeBron was able to cover the one. He was able to cover the point guard. He covered Tony Parker for most of the finals. Luol Deng doesn't have that skill set. So you're going to be seeing a lot more of Norris Cole and a lot more of Mario Chalmers. Do you have confidence in those two players? Because that's really where you're going to see the difference, not necessarily Luol Deng.
Well, when you look through the rest of that division, what are your thoughts on Charlotte and Atlanta?
I think you're spot on both. I mean, Charlotte is going to be an extremely tough out. I think they might make the playoffs. They're going to be in that lovely little if they get David West, they're going to be ridiculously tough because the one place that they need help is the four. The four and the five. They need some upfront help.
Well, they don't need help with five. They have Al Jefferson.
Sorry. Jefferson, I don't know what Jefferson is, but defensively he's not much. So
no,
if
but
they were going
to get... supposedly he was pretty good last year under Steve Clifford. He is kind of a five. And remember, Charlotte the last 2 years has drafted Noah Vonleh this year, Cody Zeller last year, two power forwards, ironically, that went to the University of Indiana, which is also why I kind of see that David West, you know, for one of those guys coming back kind of thing. Or though that may be just something in my imagination. But Jefferson was a pretty decent defensive player last year.
Well, Steve Clifford has certainly, turned that team around defensively. But you're right. They did draft two fours who are, remember, Zeller's 20, right? Came out after his sophomore year.
Mm-hmm.
And Vonleh, I believe, is 19. So, I mean, they're young guys, and they're not – they're thin. They're not bangers by any stretch. So, I think West is perfect for that team. I mean, you and I have both discussed this. Him and Jefferson would be a nice mix in the middle. They would still need people to they have Jefferson to score. They would have some rebounding. It's a good match if somebody was going to go back to Indiana, especially if they would trade Vonleh. But I'm not sure that they would for West. I think Zeller is the more likely guy that goes back. I think they'll be fighting for the 8-9 spot. They may sneak in. Look, I think it's either them or the Knicks. So we'll see what happens there.
Yeah, I like them a bit more than you do. All right, just we got about a half hour to go, so I want to jump to the West because we always haven't seemed to kind of get cut short a little bit. Starting in the Northwest, it looks like, for all intents and purposes, a two-team race between Oklahoma City and Portland, even with Kevin Durant out for, I guess, what, 2 months? But
yep.
I'm under the impression this is not the worst thing that could have happened to Oklahoma City. I actually think this is a positive. Durant, for the most part, who I think the world pretty much considers the second-best player in basketball, has not really had a break, pardon the pun, from basketball between all his summer commitments and Olympic and the World Cup and this and that in many years. And I think he needed a bit of a break. So I don't think, and this also gives them time. There's a lot of young talent, but we don't really know what they have outside of, obviously, Serge Ibaka and Reggie Jackson and Russell Westbrook. I don't really have a problem with this. Like, not that problem is the right word. I don't think this is the worst thing that could happen to Oklahoma City. I really don't.
No, I think they won't win as many games. They'll drop to probably a 3 or a 4 seed, if not more than that. Not the worst thing in the world. You get to see a little bit more of the talent that they have. I mean, we saw what Reggie Jackson could do. I still love that name. I still think of Charlie Huff, especially during World Series time. So we'll see what Reggie Jackson can do. I think seeing what Steven Adams can do in the middle is going to be a big help to that team.
Yes.
They're going to look around. They're going to see what Jeremy Lamb brings to the table. I mean, it can't just be the big three. I mean, even Miami showed you need role players. And right now, Charlotte. Oklahoma City doesn't have those. So maybe they do, and we just haven't heard about it.
We don't know yet. Yeah.
Right. Maybe we do, and we just don't know. Maybe this is the time that we find out. Durant has consistently said that he wanted time off. Well, for better or for worse, he's got it. The question is, does he come back in the same method as when he left with the same burst? A foot injury is a foot injury. It's not anything to really poo-poo. But we'll see what happens. Or Portland? You know I like Portland. I like Portland for so many different reasons, but the main reason is they have a lot of people that do the little things. They just signed Chris Kaman, who I really like, to play center and to back up Robin Lopez and LaMarcus Aldridge. They have Wesley Matthews, who I think is one of the most complete two guards that there is. Damian Lillard is fantastic and shoots very well. Nicholas Batum is like the Swiss Army knife. Him and Andre Iguodala are like the same player, just 5 years younger and one's French. But I really like that team. If Aldridge can take over like he's capable of and like he did at the first part of the next last year, they also could be a 3 or a 4. The problem is there are so many good teams in that side of the bracket that there's going to be a good team that doesn't make it.
Yeah, when you look at the rest of that division, though, it is pretty weak. Utah, young talent, they just had to spend $60 million on Gordon Hayward. I can't imagine anybody was that excited about, well, except for Gordon Hayward. Minnesota is in the midst of yet another rebuild after the Kevin Love trade. Although I do like what they got for him, I think, to me, bringing in a potential star in Wiggins, and you don't know what you have in Anthony Bennett. I don't quite understand the Thaddeus Young trade. But, again, they're a team that's not going anywhere. I guess the question with them is, Ricky Rubio is a free agent after the season. I don't even know what you would offer Ricky Rubio. $9 million a year for four? $10 million a year for four? I mean, he can't shoot. He's a good passer, a great penetrator, decent defender, but he's small, and he can't shoot. And as I said, he can't shoot. Do you see him re-signing with Minnesota?
So basically he's Rajon Rondo, like without the defense.
Not as good a defensive player.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I see him re-signing with Minnesota because I think he's going to get out there and see that the market's no better than what he's being offered. He's a $9 million, $10 million player for 4 years. So give him give him 36 for four, 40 for four, and call it a day. Unfortunately, he thinks he's a max player, and there's nobody in the NBA that will think that he's a max player. It's not there. If Gordon Hayward's a max player because Gordon Hayward has upside, I don't see the upside with Rick Rubio. I think you've seen the upside. He's where he is. Unless he can improve that jump shot, he's not getting any better.
The thing we haven't mentioned is in Colorado, the Nuggets, a team that Kenneth Reed coming off his great World Cup, gets the big contract. They have Ty Lawson. They have Gallinari. They have, for better or worse, Javis McGee. They just seem like a team that they're fun to watch. They also have Aaron Afalo. I forgot about that. But they just seem like a team that's there. You know, in the East, they would probably threaten for a playoff spot. I don't see it happening out here in the West.
No, I totally agree with that. I mean, that'd be perfect now.
That's all we really have to say about Denver.
Well, I got more to add. I mean, you're right. They are a good team that in the East would go very far, but in the West is not going anywhere. You're absolutely right.
Going to the Southwest, and this is where you see it probably as loaded a division as anything as any I can remember. When your weakest team is a team with possibly one of the top five players in the league, in Anthony Davis, you know you have strength. You have obviously the defending champion San Antonio Spurs, who lost nobody, I don't think. I can't think of anyone that they lost this year. There's probably one or two free agents, but I don't remember. Houston in a very interesting place right now, having lost Chandler Parsons. You know, Kevin McHale, his job is maybe on the line if this team does not get past the first round like they did last year. Dallas, I think, could be very, very good, bringing in some talent to help Nowitzki. And Memphis is always incredibly tough. Memphis is always that 2-7 team that seven seed you never want to play under any circumstances. How do you see this division?
Well, your assessment is pretty spot on. I mean, I really...
I want to tape that and just continuously play that. My assessment, once again, is spot on. Thank you.
Well, look, you've done your research this year. I'm rather impressed. I mean, we all know what San Antonio brings to the table every single year. This is the best division in basketball, to me,
yes.
Top to bottom. There's no bad team in this division, and I'm so excited to see New Orleans on TV twice this year that I may have to go out and watch them again at a bar because I really do like seeing that team, and I think that team has some growth. But you're right. That top to bottom, they're stacked. I mean, I think Houston may take a step back. They didn't get the piece that they needed. But I do believe that James Harden's going to lead the league in scoring. There's my prediction that he will lead the league in scoring. I will predict again that they will not get out of this first round of the playoffs because I don't think they have anybody other than Harden and Howard, and Howard can't shoot from the free throw line. I think it's unbelievable. Dallas, I think, takes a step forward with Parsons and a couple of other players that they got. I think Monte Ellis is a perfect fit for that team. Memphis is the team nobody wants to face. And here we are, San Antonio is 2-5 in the preseason. And do you really think that they're not going to be there at the end? Because every single year I say they're not going to be there at the end, and every single year that they are. So this year, I'm not going to predict that they're going to be there at the end. I think they'll be there at the conference final level, and that'll be it. I have them losing the conference.
That's where I'm going to have them as well. Actually, no, I'm not. I'm going to have them losing the second round, now that I think about it. But we'll get to that a little bit later on. The final division is the Pacific. And it's certainly not. You have two at the top. You have very strong. You have Golden State and you have the Clippers. Golden State coming off a little bit of controversy this year. Mark Jackson is dismissed. Here comes Steve Kerr. Do they trade for Kevin Love? Do they not trade for Kevin Love? Should they have traded for Kevin Love? You know, they have the best backcourt in basketball with Klay Thompson and Stephon Curry. You have Andre Iguodala. You have Andrew Bogut. If healthy, you have David Lee, Harrison Barnes, Draymond Green. This is a really good team. And this is a team that should have been better on the offensive end, and for some reason they weren't. Of course, you have the Clippers, who self-destructed last year in the semis, the conference semis, led by all-world point guard Chris Paul. But I'm starting to get tired of all-world point guard Chris Paul, who's never made a conference finals. I'm sure he's even more sick of it than I am. You know, for all the accolades that he has gotten, you know, he is now with a team with enormous amount of talent, and I believe they do make the conference finals this year. But, you know, they have him, they have Blake Griffin, they obviously have DeAndre Jordan. I don't know, I don't particularly love Redick as a starting two guard. I think you have to have him start and have Crawford come off the bench. It is a team of extraordinary talent.
Well, this is my team that makes the finals this year. I think they step out and they come through. Last year I picked it being Golden State. Obviously that got Mark Jackson fired. So when it didn't fulfill the prediction. So I take full and complete blame on Mark Jackson getting fired. That being said, they're 6-2 in the preseason. The Clippers are 2-6 in the preseason. And I have the Clippers making it to the finals against Chicago, which will be a pretty good series, in my opinion. Golden State, you're right. Golden State needs to learn how to play some defense, and I still don't think they have the pieces to do that. Phoenix is going to be incredibly exciting to watch with their four point guards and nobody up front, unless Alex Len decides to play once in a while. If his foot finally. Yeah, I know. Sacramento has a lot of pieces, but no puzzle. And the Lakers are going to be fun to watch. Well, no, they're just going to be fun to watch lose. So, really, is there anybody outside of L.A. that is not going to enjoy watching Kobe Bryant and the Lakers lose and lose a lot this year? I don't think there is.
It is a team going nowhere for the next couple of years. That Bryant
It's time. Look, they get bailed out every single year with a trade that nobody else can make. The Paul Gasol deal, before that deal, they were in the spot that they're in today.
Well, to be fair, they were also supposed to receive Chris Paul.
Right.
In a separate deal, and David Stern overruled that.
Right, but what I'm saying is they always seem to find a way. I don't think they find a way until Kobe Bryant's gone anymore. I'm loving that. So
I don't know if it's Kobe Bryant being gone or Kobe Bryant's $23 million contract hamstringing the team. But either way.
I really don't. Because they don't have anybody else on the salary. They could have signed a max free agent this year and Carmelo didn't go and Bosch didn't go and LeBron didn't even take a meeting with that team. I don't think it has anything to do with $23 million. Look, there was an ESPN article that totally blamed this all on Kobe. I can't disagree with it. I really think it's true. All right,
and I think
you're going
to see to it as well.
We did the last division.
Our last division. I agree with you. Phoenix probably the most fun team in basketball to watch.
Yeah.
Extraordinarily fast. Plus, they bring in Isaiah Thomas. So you now have Gordon Dragic, Isaiah Thomas, and Eric Bledsoe was a potential three-guard offense.
No, you got four guards. You forgot who they picked in the first round.
Remind me.
My boy Tyler Ennis.
Oh, that's right.
They got four point guards on that team.
Yeah, well, as I said, Jeff Hornacek, coach of the year last year, and you can almost see a similar trajectory of 45 to 50 wins. And still potentially not making the playoffs because the West is just that good. So, who are your eight teams in the East?
Okay, eight teams in the East. Are we doing this in order?
Yeah, if you can. If not, you just eight is fine.
All right, eight teams in the East. Chicago, number one. No, actually, I have Cleveland winning the conference. So Cleveland number one, Chicago number two. Oh, that can't happen, right? Is that
the
way
Chicago would have to be the four. Yeah, Chicago has to be the four.
All right, Cleveland number one. Washington number two. Washington number two. No, they're losing Beal. So, yeah, Washington number two. Toronto number three. Chicago number four. Miami number five. Number six is Atlanta. Number seven is Brooklyn. And number eight is the Knicks.
You don't have Charlotte making it.
I do not have Charlotte making it.
Okay. Who is your conference final?
My conference final, well, so Cleveland would have, can Cleveland play Chicago in the conference final if it's 1-4?
I think, doesn't it? No, I forget. Can you switch the order based on seeding?
I think so.
I think so, too.
Chicago against Cleveland, and Chicago beats Cleveland.
Okay, I'll take my eight's going to be a little different from yours. I agree Cleveland will win the conference. Cleveland 1, Washington 2, Toronto 3. I have Chicago 4, Charlotte 5. I like them a lot more than you do, apparently, this year. And let's see here. Miami 6, 7, Atlanta 8. And I also have Chicago over Cleveland this year. In the West?
All right, so in the West, I got the Clippers as number one. Portland is number two. Well, I really think that Durant takes off half the year.
No, I agree.
I don't think
it's weird to hear Portland number two.
And if he takes off half the year, I don't see any of Minnesota, Utah, or Denver taking that spot. So
no.
Neither Portland or the other division win, or San Antonio taking the two. The other one taking the three. Okay? Four is Golden State. Five is Oklahoma City. Six is Dallas. Seven is Houston. Seven is Memphis, and eight is Houston. And New Orleans misses the playoffs again. No Denver either.
Or Phoenix, for that matter. Who do you have in the conference final?
I have the Clippers facing the Spurs, with the Clippers winning.
Okay. I have the Clippers also winning the conference, also being number one overall seed in the conference. I have San Antonio 2. I do have Oklahoma City 3. I don't think Durant's going to take that much time off. I think you're right. Portland probably does win that division with Durant out. 3, I have Dallas as the 4. I think they take a jump up this year. I have Golden State at the 5, Oklahoma City at the 6, Memphis at the 7, and as much as I'd love to say Phoenix, I have Houston at the 8 as well. And then I have Oklahoma City over the Clippers in the conference final, and I have Oklahoma City beating the Bulls in the championship.
Okay, and I have the Clippers beating the Bulls in the championship. Year one, Donald Sterling means championship for L.A., and it just rubs it so much more in Kobe's face. Because the best part is, Kobe doesn't even have a first-round pick this year. Wait. No, he didn't have it last year.
He didn't have it last year because of the Steve Nash trade. Why wouldn't he have it this year?
He has one this year. No, he only has one this year if it's not in the top five.
Well, we'll see what happens. So, yeah, I think, as I said, I think Durant taking time off is the best thing that can happen to Oklahoma City. I think Steven Adams becomes the legitimate starter over Kendrick Perkins, or I think Scott Brooks is gone. And I think one or two of these guys step up. I think you have still an extraordinarily dangerous team. I think people are sleeping on them. And it is a very dangerous team to sleep on. And I just, you know, it's one of those teams a little bit past when you would have expected them to win it, but I like them this year.
So. Okay, so who's your MVP?
As much as I would love to go with someone other than LeBron, i.e. a Blake Griffin, I think you have to choose LeBron. I don't see what else is out there. Maybe
okay,
Curry.
I agree. I'm going to pick LeBron as number one. So who's your number two? Let's go that way.
My number two, I had Golden State going too low for Stephon to be my number two. I'm going – I guess I mean, I'm not loving this pick, but I'm guessing – I think I have to go – yeah, actually, I think I am going with Stephon Curry. I think you may have Paul Griffin splitting some votes, and there's no one for Curry to split votes with in Golden State.
Okay, I have Paul as my as number two, especially if they win that conference, especially if they get the number one seed, which I have been doing. Okay, who's your coach of the year?
Coach of the year. Give me a second to think.
Mine will be Terry Stotts in Portland.
Makes sense.
If they get the number two seed, I believe that he does that. Who's your rookie of the year?
The rookie of the year is Jabari Parker, but here's – I have a caveat to this. I have a feeling, based on – and you appreciate this as a capologist, that the rookie with the most incentive this year is K.J. McDaniels in Philly. I think he's going to start there. And he wasn't even a first round. He's a second round pick from Clemson. But he's on a 1-year non-guaranteed contract. And he turned down a 4-year guaranteed contract. And I think he is going to, you know, in Philly, you're going to have a lot of opportunity to play, a lot of opportunity to score. And I think he's going to do well there. I think he is going to be in the top three for the rookie of the year. And I think he's going to turn it into a huge contract that's going to start the next trend for second round picks. But I can't really go against Parker.
He's going to make $507,000.
Yep.
But his ability over the next several years is unmatched by among second round players, because other second round players signed big contracts. Also, Glenn Robinson passed a 4-year deal and did the same thing.
Yeah, I didn't know Robinson did. Where is Robinson? Where is Robinson?
He's with Minnesota.
Well, there may be some potential there as well. Of course, he just doesn't want to be in Minnesota. Minnesota in January doesn't sound that much fun.
Yeah, no kidding. So I'm going to say my number one rookie of the year will also be Jabari Parker. And I said number two will be Nerlens Noel. He's another guy that's going to get a ton of minutes. Same thing with McDaniel, right? I mean, a ton of minutes. Those are the only guys on the damn team.
Yeah,
that's it.
Two of them and Bede's out for the year and Carter Williams. And he may be traded, so who the heck knows? So you have Harden leading the league in points. I think that's a pretty logical pick.
I do. I have Harden leading the league in points. I have him leading the league in shots made, in shots missed, in points, and threes made, and threes missed, and leading the league in the worst assist-to-turnover ratio in the NBA.
Who's your defensive player of the year?
James Harden.
Okay.
No, I'm just kidding. Defensive player of the year will be Anthony Davis.
I'm going to go with Joakim Noah. And I think that pretty – I guess sixth man of the year, I'll go with Jamal Crawford. Because I think it's a pretty easy Gibson, I think, are the logic.
I'm going to go with Todd Gibson. Exactly. It's going to be one or the other. I totally understand that. So, it's been a good NBA preview. I know next week we're going to take the week off. I know that we have some prior commitments that we have to attend to. So the week after, we're going to have an NCAA preview. It will be also a 90-minute show in which Seth will show off all of his knowledge and show how much I have not. on that subject. So, also by that
I don't know about that. We got about 5 minutes. So I'm sorry, please.
We will also see how much the Halloween horror it is for Syracuse, who goes before the NCAA committee on October 31st.
Womp, womp.
Oh, 52-7, dude. 52-7.
Yep, but we did beat you. So my season's already made. So we got 5 minutes. Sean, what do you want to finish with?
What do I want to finish with? You know, I was really taken aback by Oscar Tavares this morning. I did not stay awake for the rest of the game last night where I heard it was broadcast. And again, our thoughts and prayers are out to him and his family who are not listening to the show. But all the same, it is a tragedy. It reminds you of Nick Adenhart, Lyman Bostack, Kelly Lindbergh, Drazen Petrovic, and all the young athletes that are taken far too early. And it makes you appreciate what you have every day of your life. So taken far too soon.
I'm going to kind of go from the sad to the stupid. Lamar Houston, the Chicago Bears defensive end, ruptured his ACL playing for the Bears yesterday. Now, nobody really played on the Bears defense, so it's kind of a relative term. But how he tore it was just so ridiculous that you just shake your head. He tore it celebrating a sack, which is bad enough. When does one celebrate a sack when they're down 28 in the fourth quarter? I don't quite understand the logic of this. Steven Tulloch, the Detroit Lions linebacker, tore his ACL doing the same thing earlier in the year. And they both said they would have done it again. Yeah, you know, it's a fluky thing, and they're going to celebrate. You're a freaking professional athlete. Give me a break. You want to celebrate? I guess that's fine. You know, it's a sack. It's what you're paid to do. When you celebrate a sack down 28 points in the fourth quarter, you're an abomination. That's pathetic. And all you did was hurt your team. Now, the Bears, you know, who the heck knows? They signed him for $35 million. It was his first sack of the year. Maybe they're better off without him. But Steven Tulloch is a solid player on a Detroit team that seems to have some potential, and he's out for the year because of this. Just ridiculous in my mind. You know, I guess a couple other – some other little sad little things. Mookie Blaylock, former Hawk, former Net, inspiration for almost the name of one of the best Seattle bands of the 90s, Pearl Jam. They almost named their their famous album 10 after Mookie's playing number. And, you know, they wanted to name the team after him, or the band after him. And he is actually going to jail for 15 years, for killing a mother for vehicular manslaughter. So, you know, a sad note on that. And then just one other thing where it just makes you shake your head. Just to ensure that Bama doesn't give Nick Saban enough, the boosters just paid off his $3 million home. Good to see that money's really going where it belongs. For Sean Palmer, this is Seth Kamen's Blog Talk Radio, BatSportsPage.com. Seth and Sean Radio Show. We'll talk to you next week. Good night, everybody.
Or the week after. See ya.
Or the week after.